The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 27 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello and welcome to episode 27 of The Catholics of Oz. My name is Lindsay Sant and I'm your host, and we're happy for you to be joining us for this episode. And joining me today is Jerry. Jerry, how are you going?
G'day, Lindsay. Good to be around.
Yes, and continuing the tradition of having all of us together is Caroline. Caroline, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Notice that this year, Caroline, I haven't started by calling you superior sibling or anything yet. I'm just trying to think of the right things to say.
I'm not opposed to you starting with that, if you like, though.
Yeah, okay. I know that you like it. Right. All right. So for everyone listening to our sibling rivalry, remember that you can like us, like the Catholics of Oz, on the SQPN Facebook page. Please retweet and share our episodes on social media, including Twitter, and leave us comments so that we can hear about what you think about our episodes and discuss those topics with you. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast app. We're also on YouTube. If you search for SQPN on YouTube, you'll find our shows there. And all you need to do is hit the bell to get notifications when new episodes come out. You can also leave feedback on your favorite podcast directories as well. This helps to share our episode with others. It sends the algorithms into a bit of a spin and says, hey, listen to this. It's great. Everyone else is listening. And it helps us to grow our community and to meet more people. So let's get started with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So, Caroline and Jerry, this episode, when it comes out, we're going to be into Lent. So we've had our Ash Wednesday, and now we're in a season of penance and of growing closer to God and preparing ourselves for celebrating the resurrection of Christ and everything it means for us. And so today, I thought we would talk about this particular topic. It's the topic of forgiveness, and I'm going to come at it from a different angle with the stories that we're going to use for this. So Lent is always about preparation, deepening our faith, and our faith is characterized by so many different things. There are so many different things that we're called to be as people of faith. And I thought today we might just focus on forgiveness, because I think when we practice forgiveness, when we decide that we might forgive someone rather than lash out at them or get really angry and get all self-righteous like we like to, which is the natural way I think that we probably like to do, it does actually build our faith. It helps us to be a bit more Christ-like and to let people see the light of Christ through our actions, because I think forgiveness is generally a bit more unexpected now when people get into conflict. And so being peaceful, being forgiveness is a great way to evangelize, but also a great way to bring us closer to Christ and the resurrection and Easter. And so what we've got for today is we thought we'd talk about popes who have forgiven would-be assassins, attackers, people in crowds, etc. So we thought we'd focus today on these stories and then just have a bit of a chat about it. So the first story of a pope who's forgiven someone is Pope St. John Paul II, had to get that right, who forgave his would-be assassin. So Jared, do you want to give us a rundown about that story?
Sure. So quite clearly, that's probably the first one that's going to spring to mind when we think about popes forgiving those who may have tried to call or have tried to cause them harm, injury, or wrongs. So I'll give a quick overview, because I feel like most people are probably aware of of it, but give a quick rundown. 13th of May 1981 in St. Peter's Square in the Vatican, the Pope was shot and wounded by, I'm going to get this wrong, pronunciation-wise, Mehmed Ali Agca as he was entering the square. So the Pope was shot four times, suffered severe blood loss, and ended up being rushed to hospital. What makes this story way different from pretty much any other shooting is that a couple of years later in 1983, Mehmet, who was caught and taken to jail, where he remained for the next 29 years or so. A couple of years after the shooting, the Pope actually visited Mehmet in jail. They spent about 20 to 30 minutes having, well, none of it's been disclosed, but he spent 20 or 30 minutes with Mehmet, talking to him, speaking to him. And when he came out of the meeting, he said, this man is my friend in whom I have complete trust. Pope St. John Paul II kept in contact with the family, and he spent a lot of time petitioning for his release, which I believe he was incarcerated in Turkey. And then I think when he was, no, got that wrong. He was incarcerated in Italy, where yes, obviously it happened. And then when he was released, he was sent to Turkey and unfortunately went back to jail for, he had history. This wasn't his first gunfight, let's say.
He'd had another life sentence in Turkey, didn't he? And he was serving that out, I think.
And they said that time served in Italy didn't count. So he was eventually released at the beginning of 2010. Unfortunately, after, for him, I suppose, unfortunately, after Pope St. John Paul II had passed away. But he's also converted to Christianity, as well as visiting the grave of his would-be victim. So, quite clearly, these sort of steps make it a much more different from the norm. You know, when someone gets shot, you really don't. It's not an easy thing to wish well upon the person who's taken aim at you and fired four bullets into your body, and you know, between life and death. You know, Pope St. John Paul II was operated on. there's a section where he says, "Don't you dare remove my scapula," when he was conscious before being operated
yes.
on. But to have suffered in body so greatly, and then to have come out and visited the person, you know, it's never going to be known what was said to him. I don't think in the interview that they had together. But you know, that's a really, really strong example of the worst that something can be done to a person, and the greatest thing that can be done in return, I think.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because in the article that we were sharing today, and we'll put this as in our show notes, it's got some great images to look at. Nothing's great about images of someone being shot, but it's got images from after that as well of the Pope recovering in hospital and meeting with Mehmet as well. But the absolute humility, like as in the embarrassment or the anger you would feel for any of us, he was shot. Two of the bullets went into his lower intestine, one into his right arm, and one his left index finger, and then two other people were wounded as well. But it'd be pretty hard to say, all right, yeah, this guy's all right, I'll forgive him, you know, I'll go meet him and we'll talk it out. Because the guy, I mean, this isn't just someone who's slapped you in the face or cheated money from you or something like that. This guy was trying to kill him, like, and he's gone and spoken to his, you know, would-have-been killer. So it's a very powerful story. And it's one that I use in classes a lot too. We talk about forgiveness sometimes. And, you know, they're like, oh, I would never forgive a person who did this or that. And I go, would you ever forgive a person who shot you? And they're what? They tell the story, and it's quite interesting.
And planned to shoot him as well. So I believe the attempt was actually planned in 1980. So shooting happened in 1981, but they were planning and moving things around, getting it ready, you know, well before the actual event. So it wasn't just a spur of the moment, oh, he's here, let's take aim.
Yeah, and the reason why he got caught, did you see that in the article?
Yes, he shot and then tried to escape in the pandemonium. He had accomplices who, got chicken and ran off without doing their parts. But as well as that, the Vatican security detail, including a nun, as well as bystanders, managed to catch and subdue him before he could escape.
Yeah. So that's a powerful story of forgiveness. Caroline, is there anything that you wanted to say about this story? Is it like do you kind of remember hearing about this and how you felt about it?
Oh yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, I found it so touching that he would take the trouble to go and meet Mehmet and have a personal conversation with him and forgive him. And I think it's just such a good example of forgiveness. I mean, yeah, like we mentioned, it's not a small thing that he did. He tried to murder him, to kill him, to take his life. And the Pope was able to rise above any anger and, you know, normal human reactions and you know, go and make friends with him and show him love and peace and kindness. I just think that's just such a beautiful example to us. And, I mean, imagine if he can forgive such an act like that, you know, shouldn't we be able to forgive little things that we tend to hold on to? You know, somebody may say something and you just like hate them forever. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He was such a beautiful, wonderful Pope, and he did so many good things. And this is one outstanding thing that he did, you know, to show us that, you know, what Pope should do, you know, show us how to live the way Jesus lived. And I think it's exactly what Jesus would have done.
It's an example. Well, you're right, because he's on the cross dying and he says, Father, forgive them about all these people. Yeah. So you're absolutely right there. But it's a story that I think once you hear it, you probably never forget, because it's so powerful. And it's one I think that's a good one to lock up in the conscience and just have there the next time we do want to get really cranky at someone over, like you said, over petty things, and just remember what he forgave this man for. Yeah. So I'll move on to the second story we've got. So this one occurred Christmas Eve 2009. So Pope Benedict the 16th now. So we're moving ahead with popes. He was in the procession for a Christmas Eve mass when a woman whose name is, I had it here in front of me, Susanna Maiolo, she jumped over the barricade. And she ran and tackled Pope Benedict the 16th and, you know, tackled him to the floor. So she brought him to the ground, and there was a cardinal, I think it was, or a bishop who was close by, who also fell to the ground. And I think he broke his hip in that incident as well. So I remember watching this on the news and thinking, how dare she? This is awful, you know, like what's this crazy woman doing? You know, Lindsay Sant judging, you know, in full judgmental mode and whatever. What I never heard, and I didn't know that this happened, is that Pope Benedict the 16th actually went to see her later on, like to visit her and talk to her. So first of all, just a quick snap poll. Did you guys know that he went and did this? Jerry, did you know that?
No. Oh,
Caroline, no?
No.
Yeah. So I actually didn't know this until I found out later, which really blew my mind. So it turns out that she had pretty serious mental health issues that she was struggling with. And so when the Pope met her, it says that he wanted to, Father Lombardi said this about him anyway, he wanted to demonstrate forgiveness, so offer forgiveness for it. And he also wanted to wish her well. And, you know, he inquired about her mental health and what she was going through and heard about that as well. So that was, he visited her. After he visited her, his aide also went to visit her a little bit later on Pope Benedict XVI's behalf, to then inquire about her and see how she was going. So it's something that he, you know, allowed to continue, like continue that relationship with her to make sure that she was okay. But even though, you know, there was a legal process to go with it, he had already offered his forgiveness and hoped that there wouldn't be any more follow-up legally for that anyway. So there we have it, an elderly man, you know, which is scary. When an elderly person falls, you know how dangerous that can be. So to be crash tackled to the ground by this woman, you know, he already being not expecting to be tackled, he would have been way off balance, you know, and gone straight to the ground. It's a very, very dangerous thing. So for him to then forgive that, again, the embarrassment, the indignity, the anger that you would feel from something like that. And his response was to do something Christ-like and show forgiveness. So there's our story number two. Jerry?
Before we just move on, just coincidentally, the release of Saint Pope John Paul II's would-be assassin was happening just about this time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is all around the 2009-2010.
Oh, wow.
Frame. So the attack happened, I think, was it Midnight Mass or Christmas Eve?
Yes, yeah? Christmas Eve, yeah, Mass, yep.
Of 2009, and Mehmet's release was in January 2010.
That's amazing. Yeah, I did not know that.
So that was happening probably about the same time they were doing the going through this meeting and forgiving stage.
Yes, that's amazing.
Just a funny coincidence.
Yeah, yep.
No such thing as coincidence.
Well, we'll let the listeners decide. And Caroline, we've got one more story, and this was a more recent one about Pope Francis.
Yeah, so it's a bit of an unfortunate event, but I love Pope Francis, but I think he lost his patience a little bit.
Yeah,
it was
also
around Christmas time. Don't we all though?
Christmas is the best time for anyone to lose their patience, I think.
Look, it's a hard time of year for anyone. So imagine, it would be hard for the Pope too. So, so while greeting the crowd in front of Vatican City, the nativity scene on December 31, maybe he got a little bit too close, but a woman actually got super excited and yanked his arm and held onto his hand. But what happened, his first reaction was to kind of like pull away and slap her on the hand, and he walked away very frustrated. And I think he was a bit like, no, no, no. And that video, of course, went viral because the media love when people fail and they to blow it up everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So, so don't worry about all the great things he's done. Let's just put, this one little thing he's done all over the news and make him look bad. Anyway, that happened. But, obviously that's not how he didn't feel good about it. And he did apologize the next day when he was doing his Angelus address. And, one of the things he said is, many times we lose our patience. Me too. I apologize for yesterday's bad example. So he fully knows that it was a bad example and he's very sorry about it. So then he met the woman, just like the other popes met, the people who did something wrong to him, but unfortunately,
the other way around this time,
behaving badly, and he apologized to her. So, there's a nice photo of him meeting her, and she was smiling, and obviously, she was the one doing the forgiving this time. And I don't think she actually spoke English, or they didn't speak the same language because. She had an interpreter with her, but they're both smiling and they're all smiling. And so it looks like she forgave him there. And, so that's, a nice little story there. But this article's got a cheeky little ending. So it says, greeting pilgrims before the same audience. The Pope joked, don't bite, with a religious sister who reached out to grab him, saying he would give her a kiss on the cheek if she stayed calm.
Yeah, nice one.
Like cheeky
that.
Pope.
Yeah, cheeky Pope. Now, so this third story is not about a Pope forgiving someone, but now saying sorry and asking for forgiveness. And one of the things I do like about this story is that he actually apologized in front of all the pilgrims that were gathered for the Sunday Angelus. So we're not talking about him sitting there thinking, oh, that was bad, I shouldn't have done that, or whatever. He apologized to people who didn't even see it, to anyone who could see, who could hear his message. So, I mean, a public apology is probably about as powerful and humble as you could get, I think, in a way.
Because, of course.
Yeah, and I saw, Twitter, Catholic Twitter went on fire, okay, when this happened.
and can imagine.
You can imagine. I won't repeat, some of the things that people were saying, but the thing is, you could debate that she grabbed his arm and she held on for too long. She kind of yanked him a bit and that was wrong. But then you could also see that his reaction wasn't the best either. And I actually take a lot of comfort in that his reaction wasn't good, because it reminds me that none of us are perfect, that we're all really, really fully capable of doing the wrong thing. And even the Pope is capable of doing the wrong thing because he's a human being too. But what's powerful about it is that he went and made it right afterwards too, which was beautiful.
Yeah.
That's probably the more newsworthy segment is what someone does afterwards, but that's probably that gets the least amount of coverage.
Correct. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I wonder how many news sites outside of Catholic press.
I think they did, probably because he did it the next, so soon afterwards.
Yep.
So it was still in the news, so that it could be, tacked on and dovetailed to them. But if he'd say waited a week, I don't reckon we would have heard about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so the apology for sure, they published, yeah, because I saw that even in The Guardian published that. But meeting this woman on January the 8th, I wonder if that was, yeah. But anyway, maybe they did. So anyone who's listening, go fact check me right now. Prove me wrong, and then I'll apologize publicly next episode.
Very humble of you, Lindsay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just following the Pope's examples. All right. What about you guys? Have you? I'm not asking for personal stories, but do we find it easy to forgive or to ask for forgiveness ourselves? What's the Jerry? What about you? What do you think?
I think it's certainly should make us shine a light on our own actions and responses, because a lot, well, maybe not so much St. Pope John Paul II, but the other two, where they were short instances in time. I was going to say no one got hurt, and then I remembered the poor cardinal who kind of busted hip. But those involved, you know, there was no lasting damage or anything like that. It does shine a light on how our reactions and how our responses can be, you know, automatic. And while we say, oh, I just reacted like that, it's our personality and the way we construct ourselves to think and act and do in certain moments, that, you know, things that we're used to, that will shine out when we react. If we are used to swearing in private and even if no one else is around, then when we are shocked and react, we'll probably swear then.
Yeah, boom. Yeah, that's right.
And similar to getting angry and frustrated at people who are, you know, people who should know better, and that's such a silly decision, but we sort of keep quiet about it, or maybe just keep it to the Twitter sphere, because that's the same as keeping quiet about it, really. but if your reactions are generally, you know, just confined to that, then when you react, it can be that your reaction will be what you've grown to customize yourself to doing. And it sort of shines a light on, yes, yeah, Pope Francis might have acted like that, and I think that was just out of just a reaction. I don't believe that he's going to react like that all the time, but it can be that our frustrations are allowed to boil over and we react like that because, well, it's the way we might condition ourselves in private. And it's certainly, well, like you said, you're not asking for personal opinions or examples, but it's certainly easy for something I can do to say, well, you know, that's such a silly thing. They shouldn't do that. They should be taught not to do that. It's easy to think like that about certain actions that people do. And then if I were to be confronted by something and a reaction were to be to come out of that for someone who does something that I privately think is foolish and stupid, I'll probably, hopefully not, but probably react the way I think in private.
Yeah, that's it. And it really is just that character development of ourselves and the putting on the mind of Christ and things like that. That's beautifully said, Jared. Caroline, how about you? Anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, I guess it depends what the situation is, but I do try very hard to forgive, obviously. I mean, that's something we need to kind of strive to do because, you know, none of us are perfect and really we shouldn't be judging each other, you know, for our faults. And, I mean, you know, if it's a petty thing, I'll be annoyed for a while, but I'll get over it, I'll forgive the person. If it's a bigger thing, it'll probably take me a bit of time, you know, but I do work really hard on trying to forgive. And, that, you know, it can be challenging if it's something very serious, you know. So I think the challenge is to keep working at it. And especially if somebody keeps doing kind of the same thing over and over again, and they just don't want to change, but it hurts you, you know. That is something that, you know, we're called to forgive anyway, like in the Bible, you know, how many times are we supposed to forgive, yes. You know, 77 times 77, you know, just keep forgiving. So that's our challenge, you know, just keep forgiving. How many times? Just keep on going, keep forgiving. So that's a real challenge, you know. So I think, yeah, if we just keep working at it and, you know, that's what we're called to do. That's about it.
Yeah, no, it's very true. It's I think of two stories that were on the news recently on our national broadcast. I'm always talking about ABC News. I should be like this. No, but there was a story in January about a woman whose husband was riding a motorcycle and he was hit by a young driver and he died. And the wife of this man, they had two kids together, and she was obviously devastated, but she didn't want to see this person punished. And she actually met with this person, with this person's parents, they're present as well. And she forgave them as well. It was really powerful. It was a new story. And she said, you know, she credits, you know, God, reading the Bible, things like that with that. And then there was another story, which it's not very old anyway. And it was, I think it was someone who lost three children in a car accident.
Yeah,
they were killed by a car.
How tragic. Yeah, just recently.
Yeah, and she's gone and offered her forgiveness to the driver as well. Again, crediting Christ with the having the ability to forgive, which just says so much about, you know, what you know, the power of what forgiveness is. And while it doesn't heal the hurts, it doesn't bring, you know, these loved ones back, or, you know, and things like that, it's just I'm sure there's some healing that comes from it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it sets a powerful example for the rest of us about what society could be like if we were just a bit more forgiving, if we were a little bit less inclined to hang on to all the hurts that people put on us and carry them around, like, you know, like scars everywhere we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's our message this Lent for our listeners. Let's conform ourselves to Christ by trying to be a little bit more forgiving. Just that little bit more this Lent. Yeah. All right. Let's roll on from there. Caroline, we're going to throw it over to you because it's time to talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, Caroline, we're going to move out of space. We've had some space ones recently, and we're going to move to the very interesting topic of bees.
Bees,
their gut bacteria.
Yay!
Go
it's
for
very
it.
Interesting.
I'm actually really excited about this. Oh, go for it. I want to hear about it.
Well, I thought this is a great story. I mean, who doesn't love honey, right?
Love it.
I mean, the sun is golden, honey is golden, everything good is golden, yeah?
True.
So, speaking of Lent and yummy things that we can't have, but
yeah,
anyway.
Thanks for doing that.
Oh, honey's medicinal. I'm sure it passes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So in many parts of the world, unfortunately, bee populations are in decline. This is due to mites, Varroa mites, and the viral pathogens that they carry in them as well, and which cause deformed wing virus. So it causes the bees to either die or just not be able to function. The mites actually feed on bee fat stores, and the obviously deformed wings causes the bees to not be able to fly. They can't find food. They die. The beehive is disrupted, etc. So, let's talk about first, how do bees make honey? I thought this was really interesting because I don't think everybody really knows. So, we know that bees fly around from flower to flower, and they'll collect nectar and pollen. So from this little article, it says when the nectar sacs are full, the honeybees return to the hive. Nectar is delivered to one of the indoor bees and is then passed mouth to mouth from bee to bee until its moisture content is reduced from about 70% to 20%. This changes the nectar to honey. Isn't that cool?
Except so, I think the people listening are not going to be eating honey anymore.
Because of the swapping from mouth to mouth. Oh, come on, they're bees.
Still not as bad as eggs and milk.
Yeah.
Can I just check? So I'm just getting this wonderful image of the bees collecting and then going to, you know, the indoor bees. Are they like singing happy songs as well while they're doing this? Or, you know, like the dwarves?
I mean, who
or
wouldn't?
Their mouths full of
honey.
It's a happy job. It's like passing nectar and it's creating honey. It's a nice little way to live, I think.
Yeah. Right.
And continuing on, this changes the nectar to honey. So sometimes the nectar is stored at once in cells in the honeycomb before the mouth-to-mouth working because some evaporation is caused by 32.5 degrees temperature inside the hive. Finally, the honey is placed in storage cells and capped with beeswax in readiness for the arrival of newborn baby bees. Pollen is mixed with the nectar to make bee bread and is fed to the larva. And a baby bee needs food rich in protein if the bee community is to flourish. So the number one reason for bee production is not for us to eat it really, is to feed baby bees.
Oh.
But oh, everybody really? That's loves a revelation. Honey.
Yeah.
But bees are not just important because we like their honey. They are also very important for the production of food. So as they collect nectar and pollen, they go from flower to flower and they will pollinate flowers. So as they're sucking the nectar out of the flower, the pollen sticks to them, and they, when they go to the next flower, the pollen will like fertilize the next flower, and mm-hmm. so therefore creating a fruit, which is usually a vegetable or a fruit, traditional fruit. And then, you know, seeds are created if the fruit or vegetable is not eaten, and the process goes on. So in this way, they are vitally important. There's no other way to do it. We need the bees. So it's vitally important for the reproduction of plants, especially our crops. And so we need the crop production. You know, the farmers who grow crops love bees, and yep. they'll often have beehives on their farms
of course,
that
yeah,
they
yep.
can cultivate their crops. They'll grow the bees, and you know they'll be able to grow their crops. But without them, it's very difficult for this to happen. And you can't go around kind of like pollinating each plant, you know, by hand.
Oh my gosh.
We need our little bee friends to do it. Yeah. So bees, I mean, there are other pollinating insects, but bees are the primary insect that commonly used. So also there are, you know, environmental benefits. So, you know, honey provides foods for certain creatures, including humans. Bees are important for the world's food production, as I mentioned, and also for ecosystems, environment in general, biodiversity, food chains, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So, you know, the bees are very important in the chain of life, you know. So once you get rid of something, something else is affected. So they're vitally important to you know, all creatures on Earth. So there's, you know, I think our bees in Australia are not affected too much, but in America, it is a huge problem.
Mm.
So as I mentioned, they're being affected by these varroa mites that feed on the fat stores of the bees, and these wing virus. So the virus is actually carried by the mites, so it's a two-in-one deal. And two for one deal, I mean. So one way a scientist called Jeffrey Barrick, who's a microbial evolutionary biologist at the University of Texas in Austin, has come up with a way, well, he's experimenting with a way to see if they could use gut bacteria of the bees to actually fight these mites and viruses directly through the bees themselves by using RNA. So what they want to do is basically disrupt the DNA processes in the mites and the RNA in the viruses so that they actually destroy themselves. So they want to genetically modify. They've chosen one bacteria. Let me just mention firstly that, you know, in humans we have thousands of gut bacteria. We've got mm-hmm. heaps, and nobody's got the same ones. It's all different. But in a bee, there's between 6 and 8.
Oh, okay. Not very much, yeah.
Not many. So they're able to isolate these bacteria quite easily, and they're confident that that's what's in a bee's gut. So what they've done is genetically engineered these bacteria so that the bacteria will actually create RNA that goes through the bee's body and actually destroys the mites and the viruses. So For this experiment, he fed the bacterium to groups of 20 bees before exposing them to any mites or virus. And then what he found is that 70% of the mites were likely to die with this treatment. And then 30 with the bees infected with the virus, 36% were more likely to survive than without these gut microbes, which is, you know, very encouraging.
Step in the right direction, yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's a novel way to it's a good targeted way to do it. You know, they have tried pesticides for the mites, but they have adapted very quickly. So it's not a really good way of doing it. So this is kind of just using biotechnology, very interesting way, a more specific targeted treatment for the bees. So yeah, that's something that they really want to go ahead with. The bacterium persisted in the gut for a long time. The experiment went for 15 days and the bacteria lasted in the gut of the bees for that whole time. And they're hoping that because, you know, the bees are obviously doing mouth-to-mouth transfer and probably their gut bacteria gets in the mix too. So they will transfer this bacteria from bee to bee. So they'll be able to kind of inoculate each other with the bacteria. And so, you know, it's a really good way of spreading. Then, you know, it's just a nice, easy way of the bees to kind of continuously look after themselves. Now, there's always a problem when you're releasing genetically modified organisms into the environment because you can't contain the bacteria, obviously. There's no way of doing it. Anytime you release anything genetically modified into the environment, there's always a risk that you know, organism's DNA is going to integrate into the organism that's naturally occurring. So there is a bit of, you know, a bit of an apprehension there. I mean, we've had examples such as you've probably heard of, well, I have because I did the studies in biology, but Monsanto that have created genetically modified crops, which is a quite big thing up in America. And I think we buy Monsanto crops down in Australia too. I'm not sure about that one. I think that's somewhere in the memory bank. But, you know, it's hard to contain it, and they've found genetically modified crops in crops of people who didn't buy genetically modified crops, and then they are accused of, you know, taking the crops or whatever, you know, so and you're not keeping strains pure. So the DNA can actually get out, you know, through, you know, all sorts of dispersion methods. So, you know, while it's a great idea, it could be a great idea, you know, it's got to be controlled. So, yeah, but it's hopeful. If we can get this going for bee populations, that would be wonderful. You know, we really need to look after our fuzzy little friends. So, yeah. And we love honey. So, yeah.
We do. We need our honey and everything. Yeah. That's really fascinating. I was on a bit of a tangent or a sort of subtopic. I was in the Melbourne Museum. You've been before, haven't you, Caroline?
Oh, yeah.
Did you go to the body? There was the mind, but leave the mind part out. I complained about that two episodes ago. But did you go to the body exhibit at all when they were talking about human gut bacteria at all?
You know what? Every time we go there, the kids always end up wanting to go to the play area. So I have to go section by section and they get bored. So I haven't made it to that section yet, but yeah.
But that it talks about basically human gut bacteria and the absolute importance of us you know, making sure our diet is good enough to support the bacteria that we have to help, you know, to help us, you know, well live. But it was interestingly, there's a game you can play. It's like a big flat television screen, touch screen. And basically it's got all these little foods and things that you can eat floating around, and you tap on them if you want your little character to eat them, and it tells you what it does to your gut bacteria. For example, if you tap on antibiotics, which is a really interesting one, the gut bacteria went right down. Or if you ate donuts, unfortunately, they're not good for gut bacteria either. But
no.
Yeah. I just
yeah, no, that's an interesting one. No, it's true. as part of like a good healthy diet, I've watched many documentaries on this because, you know, I'm a microbiology buff as well. But you do need to nurture your gut bacteria. So you need to eat the proper, you know, good foods like vegetables and fruits and meat, because they thrive on that kind of food. And what they do is they actually make vitamins and all sorts of things that support your body and your immune system, and they just do so many things for us that we don't even fully understand yet. So the problem with antibiotics, one of them, not just antibiotic resistance, is that we do kill off the natural flora in our guts. And so we may be inadvertently killing off bacteria that are advantageous to us. And say, like, one day you won't have an allergy to something, but next time you will have an allergy to something because the bacteria that was in your gut used to help you protect from that. You know, used to be part of create something that was part of your immune system that stopped you getting that allergy.
Right.
Or, you know, that's just one example. And if you're eating a lot of sugar, that, you know, you get the wrong kind of they're producing the wrong kind of product. So you're not getting what you need in your body. So there's so many. Oh, that's just a whole other topic that I really
think we should do a topic on this
known as
science segment, because it is really interesting. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, definitely. That's something we can put on the list. Yeah. So, I don't know if you want me to mention on this, but like some people who have gut problems, they don't know what it is, but they'll have a, poo transplant.
Yes. So no, this someone, is a thing. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a medical procedure.
Yeah. So somebody who has, they know somebody's got, you know, a full range of gut bacteria or a very good range, you know, and they'll transplant it to someone who has a particular gut problem. Yep. For example, they may have loose bowels, you know, and they can't control it. They'll have this transplant and they're cured because they've suddenly got the right gut bacteria in their body. So, yeah, that's just a whole other interesting, study.
Yes.
Bacteria are very important, very important.
And I think it's something that, because I certainly wasn't really, you know, too aware or worried, you know. I mean, I like my KFC and everything, but, but I didn't realize how important this actually is. I knew we had gut bacteria, but I thought they just took care of everything themselves. I didn't realize there were things that we need to do in order to, and kind of health and the immunity, like it's part of your immune system as well, the effects on that. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe future science. I'm going to commission you to get this ready for another science segment in an episode.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. Let's do it.
All right. Let's move on from gut bacteria to talking about entertainment.
Where you get your delusions, laser brain.
It's not what we came here to do.
No, but it's what I'm going to do.
I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So we thought we'd cap off the show by talking about what we've been watching on TV and on our streaming services. So just some things that we've been really enjoying that maybe we can recommend or not recommending, depending on what it is to our listeners. So, Jerry, can I throw over to you first? What have you been watching recently?
All right. So Priscilla and I have been on Netflix watching the live-action show called Titans.
I think
it's based on the Teen Titans cartoon of the same name, and I think the comic strip as well. So it's a DC brand. It's probably about as dark and melancholy as the movies have sort of been.
It really is, yeah.
So we're enjoying it. We like the character interaction and the storyline so far. We're probably most of the way through season one. I would warn, though, that while recommending it, I will caveat to say that go in there prepared, because it's not for the faint-hearted. It's not all that bad. It's probably, there's less violence than, say, something like Marvel's Punisher, for example. There's probably pretty much anything on TV that's got less violence than Marvel's Punisher. So I was more familiar with the Teen Titans because my children, Caitlin and James, both like watching Teen Titans.
Yeah, Damien too.
I kind of enjoy it too because they...
Yeah, my kids love it.
Oh, good, yeah. Because they take some just fully, really silly situations and have fun with it. I think once there was an episode about the Tooth Fairy, and it ended up that the Tooth Fairy collects the teeth and then eats the teeth. Makes no sense.
It always has a weird tangent, doesn't it?
Yeah. I remember the one where they were wondering why Beast Boy wasn't helping out that much, and it's because he got things and painted them green and left them there while he went off and did something else, like painted animals green or whatever.
So. Yeah, so there's always something weird. And this is where I sort of came from in relation to Titans, was that I was familiar with Teen Titans, so I was kind of expecting, you know, something like a live-action remake. Oh, boy.
Yes.
Like
yes.
So it retains the characters. So it's Robin of Batman and Robin, an extraterrestrial named Starfire with flaming red hair, Raven, who's an empath, and you mentioned Lindsay Beast Boy, who's green and he can shape shift. In the cartoons, there's another one called Cyborg, which I'm guessing that's his name, pretty much describes what he is and does. He's not in it as far as we can tell, and the others sort of pretty much retain what they were. It's kind of an origin story, so they start off not knowing each other. Robin runs into Raven, and then later on Starfire and Beast Boy join them. So far as we can tell, Beast Boy is only a shapeshifter into a tiger, as opposed to all the other strange creatures he takes.
The cartoon,
in the cartoon. The story sort of focuses mainly on Raven and her lineage. So it talks about her dad being, I think, a world eater. We're not at a spot yet where we know whether he actually does it and anything like that, but everything seems to be focused on and around either protecting her, trying to find out more about her, and understanding the power that she has. We've also hit a what we call a Karen Page moment. So I think she was a character from Daredevil. She got her own episode once, and my wife and I found it a complete insert of an episode that added nothing to the story. So we've had one of those where I think it left us on a cliffhanger, and then it shifted to some other characters who had a story that could have been told in 5-10 minutes, but they made an episode out of it.
Yeah.
I think it can be good, but it generally hasn't really helped us because they just completely move away from the original storyline to go on a side quest, essentially. And that works in games, but not so much in a series.
Yes. Yeah.
So we are quite enjoying it. As I said, we're most of the way, I think, through season one, and there's another season to go. So there's obviously a bit to fill. I don't know if they're still doing it either. I'll probably find that out after season two finishes. In terms of famous faces in there, I think a couple of them are Australian actors, which is nice to know. The Robin and Raven, Australian actors.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I think they were, especially Robin, certainly has that home and away.
Yes.
Look about it. Not something we're really familiar with these days.
Funny.
Now, there was one episode where there was, this is the character who I thought might play the role of Cyborg, but he was only a one episode wonder. He was basically a guy in a metal suit.
Yes. In the mansion, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And he was voiced by none other than Brendan Fraser.
Really?
Of The Mummy.
Really?
Yeah. Really?
So the article said. I had to go on Hunter. I wouldn't have known that one. And then there's another character. I didn't write down what her role is, but Mariner Surtis, who people will be familiar with from, is it Next Gen?
Yep, Counselor Troy.
Yes.
Yep.
She's got a role in there as well. I didn't write it down. I can't remember what character she plays, but I think she plays a smaller role.
Okay.
And funny enough, I think she's reprising her role, just on a side note, in Picard.
Yes, correct. Yes. So it's in the trailers that she'll turn up. So, and a few other Star Trek. Picard is great. Like, we're getting to that now, but my goodness, I'm loving that show so much. Yeah.
So we're enjoying Titans. If you've seen Teen Titans, don't go in there thinking it's the same thing.
No, definitely not.
Because it is a very DC brand of dark, I suppose, sort of darkness. I'm trying to think of something to make dark the adjective for, but darkness will do. There is some humor in there, which is more than we can say for some of the other DC sort of films, barring Aquaman, because we found that funny. But the interplay between the four main characters, it's actually quite good, especially for what we found to be a DC film, because there's just no cheery or funny moments at all, which is where we believe Marvel has it well over DC in that they both do fighting scenes pretty well, but then the character interaction, Marvel's streets ahead of DC, but this one I think is pretty good. Especially since you're not using actors that are household names or have ever been considered A-list, I guess. I would recommend it, but I don't want to do a thing where it's suddenly going to turn sour later on. So I cautiously would recommend watching Titans.
Good move.
There is one scene or sort of episode in there where that has, I suppose, a Catholic connection in there. Raven spent some of her child in a, was it convent, I think. And at some of the times she said this is the place where she felt the most safe. Obviously, to make a movie, there has to be conflict all over the place. So the nuns try and avoid the conflict by sort of hiding her away. And obviously that doesn't, you know, fit the story's narrative because there has to be fighting.
Yeah.
And so they sort of end up being there for, I think, an episode or two and then haven't been seen in the story since. But I did like the Catholic connection they had that Raven did feel a sense of comfort and security when being around the nuns.
Yeah, great. I think I'm about 4 or 5 episodes in. I've been watching it very slowly, but yeah, the same. I went, jumped into the, I've seen Arrow and, you know, these, they were pretty good. And then suddenly violence. I was like, whoa, that was a bit over the top. Yeah, it's not like supremely disturbingly violent, but you have to be ready for a couple of things if you want to watch it.
They make full use of the technology available these days in terms of.
I think that's a good summary. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. All right. Caroline, how about you? What have you been watching?
Lots. the 3 things I've been watching, I won't go into a lot of detail, but first of all, highlight of my life. No, not really, but one of my favourite shows, The Good Place. I think a lot of people watch it on Netflix. It finally came to an end. I'm assuming it is the end because it's pretty endy, but I don't want to say what happens. But wow, what an amazing show. I mean, it makes you think. I mean, it's complete. It's all about, you know, what happens when you go, when you die, and you either go the good place or the bad place, and it's kind of, you know, a bit funny, and it's very heavy in philosophy rather than any real theology because it's completely not theological in terms of the Catholic faith, at least. But, you know, it's got, you know, angels. They're not angels. Are there any angels in there? No, there's demons in there.
I don't remember there being angels. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. But anyway, you know, so these 4 people make it to the good place supposedly at the beginning, and then they find out they're not, and then they are. There's a whole adventure there, and it's fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. And I was watching season 4, last little while, and I watched the last episode and I went, oh, I totally got bamboozled there. I got, you know, oh, I didn't expect that. So yeah, I don't want to say what happens. I don't want to really actually give any detail because if you haven't watched it, it'll be totally spoiler. And it's a show you don't want spoiled. So yeah, fantastic. And have you guys watched much of it? Lindsay, you've seen some.
I've watched the first 3 seasons. I'm yet to watch season 4.
Oh, yeah.
So
okay.
Isabel and I will find some time to sit down and watch it soon enough. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you get through it really quickly.
Yeah, I love the laugh out loud moments though, because there are a lot of them. It's really well done.
Yeah. And I love Ted Danson in it. I think he's fantastic.
Absolutely.
So good.
He's great. Just as a side note, now it's going to be a couple of episodes. So by the time of recording, it could be maybe 5 or 6 episodes. Maybe Dom could put in the show notes if he can find it. But on an episode of Raising the Bets, Dom and Melanie did talk about the last season of The Good Place with spoilers. Yeah. So if anyone wants a spoilery discussion, you can go find it there. But I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely watch it. The other thing that my husband and I watch religiously every time there's a new season, we're a little bit nerdy. It's not really nerdy. I don't even know what category you put this in, but it's Doc Martin. So it's an English production, and it's about a doctor who has a bit of a personality problem. He's just a bit gruff with people, but he's an excellent doctor. It's a little bit like
but you're
House.
Just describing the whole plot of House for a sec.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. He doesn't have such difficult cases to solve. They're pretty much straightforward, but there's always a disaster in the episode. The key thing with him, though, is that he has a blood phobia. So every time he has to draw blood or there's a wound or something, he's either, you know, retching or fainting. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of the funny side of things. And, you know, people, you know, his patients will come up to him, go in the consultation, they'll want to start chatting, and he'll be just like, he's just not into it. He just wants to, you know, he wants to give them the consultation and, you know, on your way. And
now it sounds like
it.
Becca.
That's a bit of everything. but it's set in Port Wen, which is a tiny little community and fishing village. And, you know, so everybody knows everybody. And it's really cute. It's a really sweet thing to watch. You know, it's just, and it's funny. So, yeah. It's got the latest season is out now. And we accidentally finished watching it all yesterday. So we didn't realize it was the last episode until, you know, they go, that was the last episode of Doc Martin. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
What did you watch it on? Just curiously, out of curiosity.
I think Phil obtained it from somewhere on the internet.
Okay.
But we'll describe that last
coming out.
It is available on ABC iView.
Okay.
However, they don't keep the episodes up there, so you have to kind of keep up with it.
Right.
And quickly, Oh, you've got to watch it, Lindsay. I can't believe you haven't watched it yet.
I know you've mentioned it over the years. I've never got round to it.
Doc Martin is fantastic. I mean, I think it's in the same kind of category as Poirot. You know, we love watching Poirot and, you know, those kind of English productions.
Okay.
I just think they're fantastic. Yeah, it's really good. It makes you want to watch episode after episode, you know, like binge watch it. So it's really good. And the last quick thing I want to mention is The Lost Treasures of Egypt, which is a documentary series, and it's kind of like the latest. Well, they'll follow an Egyptologist who's been working in Egypt, obviously, and they have an archaeological site, and, you know, you go through with them, go with them on the journey just, you know, for an hour. And you go through while they discover things, and, you know, and we always find some new information about.
Yeah.
It could be like a worker who was a tomb of a worker who was, helping to build the pyramids, or someone a bit more status who's like a medicinal healer lady, and she got a special burial, so there was artifacts there and they managed to find her name, and there was like a seal that she had, and they were able to find her name and they got really excited about that.
Very cool.
He was actually a boy. They thought he'd be a man. It turned out he was a young boy, but he had a very high position, and he was buried with four wooden boats. So they had the four wooden boats there still in his tomb.
Wow.
That they were able to take out and, you know, kind of repair. And yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, for me, Egyptian history is just, you know, I don't know. It's just amazing and mysterious and all of that, you know. So it's fascinating. That's the word I wanted to talk.
Coincidentally, there's a couple of episodes of Mysterious Wells, Jamaica's Mysterious Wells, just on Ancient Egypt. There's a couple of those. So
that's right.
Yeah, I don't know which ones they were. I've got to go digging through.
Yeah, it was quite recent. Yeah, there was one that was quite recent. And one on Tutankhamun.
Yes.
Tutankhamun, as one of them pronounced it on one of the documentaries I was watching. If you can find that, Lost Treasures of Egypt, watch it. Fantastic.
Yeah, sounds fascinating.
Yep.
All right. Yep. Well, I've got two. I'll keep it pretty brief. So I've got an Amazon Prime account here at home. And one of the reasons I got it is because Jeff Bezos saved one of my absolute favorite sci-fi series called The Expanse. And so what happened was the Sci-Fi Channel had three series of The Expanse. And then they cancelled the show. And then Jeff Bezos said, I'm pretty sure he's a fan of the show. And so basically it's been bought and moved to Amazon Prime, which I'm grateful for because now I've got somewhere to watch it still. So season four came out, and basically season three kind of concluded like the first story and left a bit of a cliffhanger. They basically, at the end of season three, their whole understanding of traveling around the universe changed. I'll leave it without spoiling too much. And so now they're exploring other parts of the universe. And season four is like a new story in a way. So it's the same characters, but now they're in a new situation. And I really enjoy it. Like, season four is a bit like season one in the sense that there's a lot of setup going on. So there's a lot that's not, like, that we don't understand yet because a lot of unknowns, which will get explored over time. But I've got to say, I actually really enjoy this series a lot. It does have Titans level violence sometimes, and it can be a problem. Some of the main characters can make questionable moral choices, However, they've set up a world in which they can tell stories in which, you know, strange things like this can happen. But it's great because it jumps from, you know, political situations that are going on in Earth's solar system to, you know, having Earth and Mars having very different cultures from each other. And then these characters in this little ship that are caught in the middle of all of it, with this large alien mystery that's also going on at the same time. Yeah, so I would recommend The Expanse Season 4. Don't watch it with your kids. Definitely not. but for me, one of the best sci-fi series I've seen like in a long time, and I'm really enjoying it and looking forward to more. Why do I think it's one of the best? Because I find myself re-watching this series over and over from time to time. There aren't many series, where, apart from Star Trek probably, where I say I can do that. But I find it so interesting, and it's one of those series where you learn more and more as you watch, because there are so many things that you know, blink and you'll miss in it. It's really good. The last thing I'll mention... Oh, sorry, Jerry, do you want to...
I was just thinking as well, I feel like I've heard comment about that show. You know, we've watched a few episodes and then it got cancelled off, so I haven't gotten back into it yet. But I have heard complimentary, you know, people giving a compliment saying that it is quite similar to what space travel and those sort of things would be like.
Yeah.
So they haven't taken liberties on, you know, how things might or may not work like some other space shows do. It's been said that, you know, when something is happening in this film, it's actually quite likely to what we understand it would actually happen if it were to happen in real life.
Yeah, there's no warp drives, deflector shields, you know, red alerts, and, you know, it's just, they do try and, as much as they can, I guess, they try and add some sci-fi realism to it, which is really good. Just one more very quickly, because I'm conscious of time. We're just going to be over in a sec. But I watched a documentary now with Disney Plus having, again, all of its National Geographic documentaries on there, a whole lot of them. There was one that I'd heard about a while ago, and I thought I'd give it a go. It's called Free Solo, and I'll just give the bare bones description of it. But it's, Jerry, go on.
It's not Free Hand Solo.
It's not Free Hand Solo.
Not episode 5?
Yeah, no, it's not. Oh, there's no Star Wars connection at all. It's called Free Solo. And it's about a guy who climbs El Capitan, which is a kind of a cliff face in Yosemite National Park. And normally people climb it with ropes and, and pegs and guides and whatever you call them. He climbed it with no gear at all. So he basically just climbed it from from bottom to top. Using his hands and feet. Now, it goes through the whole process of him preparing for it. He does climb it a couple of times using ropes and whatever to get a feel for everything. He gets a feel for all the nooks and crannies and every little, you know, all the little parts and where they are. And then he climbs it, and it takes about 4 hours to climb. And he does it with no gear whatsoever, just his runners and his, you know, his t-shirt and you know, trousers, and that's it. And it's amazing to watch. It was a really amazing documentary, and thank God he didn't die, because it would have been devastating if he did. It would be a waste of life. But, you know, it's, even though, you know, the documentary is probably going to have a happy ending, it's still very, it's still very nerve-wracking watching, because you see him at particular points on the cliff face and how high up he is, and it's just ridiculously high. So, I totally recommend Free Solo if you haven't seen it. I watched it with my family. Well, not with Alexander, he was just being a monkey in the lounge room. But, you know, Damien, as a 10-year-old, when we watched it together late last year, he loved it. He was, you know, right into it as well. So totally recommend that. So, guys, thanks for your recommendations of TV shows. We'll finish up there. We want to thank everyone for joining us on episode 27 of The Catholics of Oz. Before we do go, though, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Catholics of Oz. And today we'd like to thank Janet W., Joseph G., Michaela K., Chris D., and Sandy F. Because of their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for The Catholics of Oz and all the other shows on StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we would love to know your thoughts about today's episode. So we've had a couple of topics where we've shared our thoughts, and we'd love to know what you think as well about those. So you can do that by visiting sqpn.com/Oz, spelt OZ, and you can find our show notes there as well. To leave more comments, you can find us at SQPN's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, and just find the post about our episodes and leave some comments there. But if you want to have a more direct contact with us, you can join us on our own Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/CatholicsOfOz. And it's a closed group, and we'd love for you to join us and leave some comments and tell us what you think there. You can also email us at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It was great.
And Jared, pleasure as always. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sand. Thank you for listening to the Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.